This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Climate news gets more extreme all the time, but media and the public are years behind the dire projections by scientists, many of them on this show. Thresholds like polar ice melt, dying rainforests, and disappearing species, when tipped, we cannot go back. We can give up, or grieve, or hope technology can save us from the catastrophe of technology. But a new slim hope is emerging, although you never hear about it. One-third of global warming is driven not by carbon dioxide, but by methane. It is called methane in Europe and sold as natural gas everywhere. Pound per pound, methane is 80 times more powerful as a warming gas than CO2. Fortunately, there is less methane in the atmosphere than CO2. But like everything else, since the Industrial Revolution, humans have more than doubled the amount of methane in the atmosphere. Now comes a group of veteran scientists saying we can take it back out. Sir David King is former chief scientist for the United Kingdom. He founded the Center for Climate Repair at Cambridge. At the end of September, many of the world's leading methane experts were called to an all-day panel talking through methane removal to cut warming immediately and by at least a decade more time. They proposed to restore the balance of methane back to pre-industrial levels by enhancing the natural breakdown of the gas. It is a bold vision. In a sense, we broke the functioning of the atmosphere with greenhouse gas emissions. Now we repair the atmosphere, returning to the balance of gases that sustained all current life forms, including humans and our crops. And as you will hear from two guests who attended that Cambridge forum, capturing methane may not require the kind of energy and infrastructure needed to get carbon dioxide out of the air. Humans tried to restore wetlands. The American bald eagle was saved and returned to the wild. Stay tuned, and you will get the vision. Maybe we can restore the atmosphere. Rob Jackson is professor of Earth System Science at Stanford University and a senior fellow of the Stanford Woods Institute for the Environment. He is chair of the Global Carbon Project, an award-winning scientist and photographer. His latest paper explains how methane removal can delay dangerous thresholds of global warming. Dr. Rob Jackson, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me.
Well, the September paper advances a kind of controversial climate solution. Why is it time to remove methane from the atmosphere?
I think it's time to consider everything at this point. You know, I've been in this field for decades, and after, you know, watching another decade's worth of carbon dioxide and methane and nitrous oxide emissions build up in the atmosphere, we're running out of time to reset the clock and keep the Earth at safe levels of warming. I think an idea like methane removal is unusual and not familiar with people, and it's difficult, but we need to be exploring all these different options now.
Yes, so many scientists argue methane has a relatively short lifetime in the atmosphere. The real lasting threat is carbon dioxide. Your answer?
Well, it's true. Carbon dioxide emitted today will be in the atmosphere for centuries, or at least some of it will, a good portion of it will. So we think of carbon dioxide as a cumulative gas. It's like a bucket filling up through time. Methane lasts, you know, for a couple decades at most on average. And so much of what we emit today will be gone, you know, over the next 10, 20, 30 years. But on the other hand, methane is a really powerful greenhouse gas, far more powerful than carbon dioxide. So if you look at a 20-year time frame, over the next two decades, for instance, a pound of methane causes 80 or 90 times more warming than a pound of carbon dioxide does. So if we're interested in kind of buying ourselves time to address carbon dioxide longer term and shave peak temperatures and delay crossing temperature thresholds, there's no lever at our disposal more important than methane.
Well, here in the West, we just experienced a record-setting heat dome last summer and all sorts of wildfires, and there's other heat events going on around the world. So what is the vision here, Rob? What is the methane goal, so to speak?
I happen to have been up in Oregon at the time of the record heat wave this summer. It was truly shocking to see. The goal for methane, first and foremost, is to cut emissions. So So I'm happy to talk and speak about methane removal and oxidation because I believe in it. But before we go to processing the whole atmosphere and removing gases, we ought to be focused first and foremost on keeping greenhouse gases out of our air to start with. So the number one agenda, whether it be for methane or for carbon dioxide, is mitigate today. And reducing emissions today will always be cheaper and more effective than spending money to remove a greenhouse gas from the atmosphere later. But having said that, with the infrastructure that's already in place on Earth, power plants and natural gas facilities and such, we're kind of locked into a certain amount of emissions over the next few decades. And it's pretty apparent that we're going to zoom past 1.5 degrees C as a safe temperature threshold. We have about a decade's worth of emissions. You know, I'm worried that we won't even be able to stabilize temperatures at 2 degrees C. So along with the need to cut methane emissions, I believe we have to now consider other approaches, including removing methane from the atmosphere in the same way that many companies are already set up to remove carbon dioxide now and starting to go down that path, even though it's not easy.
Well, Stanford has a reputation for developing technology. What technologies to remove methane from the atmosphere look the most promising to you, Rob?
There are two sort of groups, if you will. For one, the first group is to try and enhance the things that happen naturally. So there are radicals in the atmosphere, chlorine and hydroxyl OH radicals. They are the things in the atmosphere that oxidize methane, turn it to carbon dioxide to start with. So there are technologies where people are trying to enhance natural oxidation. You could imagine producing OH or chlorine radicals in a stream of air and using that to oxidize the methane. So that's one possibility. That's not the possibility that I've worked on the most individually. I'm interested in catalyzing methane oxidation. So everyone's familiar with a flare that you might pass in an oil and gas field or in a refinery. And the reason we use flares is because methane is so much more potent than carbon dioxide. It pays to burn it, to oxidize it, and convert it to carbon dioxide. And we can't use a flare below, you know, sort of 50,000 parts per million. And methane in the atmosphere is only 2 parts per million. So it's really low concentration. But we can, in principle, use catalysts to do this. So a catalyst is something that speeds a reaction that's sort of downhill thermodynamically, and it can happen naturally as long as you kind of get it started. So I'm particularly interested in catalysts. There are compounds called zeolites that are minerals that are very high surface area, and you can embed metals and other things to oxidize methane in those mineral frameworks. So that's the kind of approach that I'm interested in. I'm happy to talk about all the reasons why that's difficult and many other things, too.
But when the methane is broken down, as you say, carbon dioxide is a major byproduct. Why would you suggest that the CO2 will just be released into the atmosphere instead of captured right then and there?
It's mostly a cost argument. If you want to oxidize the methane and latch onto the carbon dioxide, then you're having to do two difficult things in sequence, and that increases the cost. And the amount of carbon dioxide that comes from this is really trivial compared to the carbon dioxide from land use change like deforestation and especially from fossil fuel use. So it's the amount of carbon dioxide, extra carbon dioxide that comes from this is really tiny compared to what we're putting in the atmosphere. And, you know, to repeat myself, methane is such a potent greenhouse gas that it just makes all kinds of climate sense to want to do this. It's the same reason why we don't allow companies to just release their methane into the air at a refinery or an oil and gas field. They flare it because it's the responsible and the right thing to do. So you can sort of think of expanding the idea of flaring in the atmosphere using catalysis, only it's not a flame now. It's a chemical reaction.
But methane is harder to break down than some other atmospheric chemicals. Will it take a lot of energy to remove it?
Well, literally, no, if it can be done with catalysis. One big difference between methane removal, carbon dioxide removal, is that carbon dioxide removal takes a lot of energy to remove it from the atmosphere, and then of course you need to concentrate it and pump it underground, or you need to put the carbon dioxide somewhere. Methane is, you know, it's an exothermic reaction. Methane oxidation is downhill thermodynamically, so you could actually get a little heat out of it when you do it, and by releasing the carbon dioxide back into the air, you don't need to worry about concentrating it, pumping it underground the way you do with carbon dioxide. I think there are ways in which methane is more difficult than carbon dioxide, and I think there are some ways in which methane has some advantages compared to CO2, and we need both.
What if we have a carbon tax that's designed to promote carbon dioxide capture and storage, because that's what politicians and the public are really aware of? Would that help or hinder methane capture?
I don't know is the honest answer. We already have here in the United States, we already have, you know, the 45Q rule. We have some financial incentives for companies to store carbon dioxide underground, say at power plants. But we even pay companies to use the carbon dioxide for enhanced oil recovery. So pumping the CO2 underground and sort of pushing extra oil out of the ground at the pumps. So I think, first of all, I believe very strongly that we need to be investing more than we are in carbon dioxide capture and storage underground. You know, it makes no sense to allow power plants to continue to just release their carbon dioxide into the air when we could be doing something about those emissions today and need to be doing something about those emissions. I believe that if we can get a carbon dioxide removal industry better established, it will make it more likely that a methane removal industry builds up or grows too. I don't think they're incompatible. I actually think greater CO2 action could help us place more emphasis on methane too.
Scientists differ on the methane threat. On Radio EcoShock, Ewan Nisbet described testing vials of air, and he found recent increases in atmospheric methane came mainly from East African bogs. But Peter Wadhams points to methane deposits frozen on the shallow Arctic seabed. But all these scientists came together in Cambridge conference recently on methane removal, and it was headed by Sir David King, formerly the UK's chief scientist. Is there agreement now is the time to act?
Well, there's certainly agreement that now is the time to act. I was fortunate enough to speak at the Cambridge conference, and I've worked with both Ewan and Peter Wadhams. You know, Ewan's, of course, an expert on tropical emissions. He's done a lot of work in Africa from wetlands. And there is concern that natural sources of methane, and wetlands are the largest natural source, might increase as temperatures rise. And, of course, Peter Wadhams has been one of the strongest advocates for concern about runaway methane release from permafrost thawing. There's, you know, centuries, millennia of carbon locked up in the Arctic as peat and in permafrost. And if that system thaws, then that carbon could be released to the air as carbon dioxide, which would be bad, or as methane, which would be even worse. So there is consensus that we need to act, and I think it isn't just wetlands and, you know, in the tropics. It's oil and gas wells and coal mining and cows and landfills and all, you know, all of these sources that we know are out there. We need to address emissions from them all, not just any one category.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.
You are tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith. We're talking about ways to delay the worst of climate change with methane removal. Our guest is distinguished scientist Stanford's Dr. Rob Jackson. The guts of the climate benefits from methane removal are in the Royal Society paper published September 27, 2021. And it becomes plain that methane removal works mainly to buy us time. Rob Jackson, how much can we delay the onset of critical warming thresholds?
Well, it would depend on the scale, the amount of methane that's being removed from the atmosphere. But we published a second paper in that same special feature in the Royal Society organized, and it was a modeling study of kind of large scale methane removal that a student, Sam Abernethy, did. And his analysis, you know, he quantifies not just the temperature savings of methane removal, but also the ozone benefits. Methane contributes to ozone formation near the Earth's surface, and ozone kills people, causes respiratory illness, reduces crop yields and plant growth. You know, so there are benefits beyond temperature, but we could, you know, we can shave tenths of degrees of peak warming in the near term using this. We can delay the arrival of peak temperatures by decades too. It is a lever for delaying the worst effects of climate change.
The most extreme case of the IPCC pathways system seems to predict that we could hit 4 degrees of warming above pre-industrial by 2080, and that's just absolute ecological and civilizational disaster. Is it possible we will need methane removal as a tool to avoid the worst?
Well, it's certainly possible. Lord help us if we get the 4 degrees C average warming across the planet. You know, you will see thousands of years of rapid sea level rise and all kinds of things. So I sincerely hope that we don't get there. I imagine a world with methane removal that's a little bit different than the way people speak about carbon dioxide removal. With carbon dioxide removal, you need to we need to remove billions or tens or hundreds of billions of tons of carbon dioxide from the air to make a difference, because it's because we've emitted, you know, a couple trillion tons since the start of the Industrial Revolution. And there's just a lot of carbon up there. With methane, I envision a world where we might do maintenance removal of methane for, say, 100 or a few hundred million tons a year that would allow us to offset emissions from food production and sources of methane that are expensive or difficult to eliminate or mitigate. So I have this dream of restoring the atmosphere. I talk about atmospheric restoration a lot, that our goal should be to restore the air back to pre-industrial levels the same way that we talk about restoring wetlands and restoring endangered species to health. So we need to be talking about returning the atmosphere to health too. And you could do that for methane in a lifetime, but it will take multiple lifetimes to do that for carbon dioxide just because of the sheer quantities.
Your latest paper calls for a research agenda for methane removal. Why has it taken so long for this basic step to get going, and do we have the time for the research we need?
It's taken time because emissions of all greenhouse gases have sped up. I mean, last year, the jump in atmospheric methane was about 15 parts per billion. It was, you know, the highest increase in at least 40 years. So the pace of the atmospheric change is increasing. And then we're seeing the world nudged more and more towards, we're already sort of 1.2 degrees C warming now globally, and we're very close to thresholds people care about. And, you know, I think increasingly there's a recognition that as much as we need to focus on carbon dioxide mitigation alone isn't enough to stave off climate change. We need to do something about methane and nitrous oxide, too. So I think all these factors coming together say we need methane action now, and we need to be planning for methane action this century because some of these technologies are difficult and take decades to deploy.
Well, let's assume that methane removal gets the backing it needs. What do you want to see happen? What are the steps to get back to pre-industrial methane levels?
The first step is to eliminate or substantially reduce emissions to the atmosphere. So as we discussed earlier, more than half of global methane emissions on Earth come from things that we do, from agriculture and fossil fuel use. But that methane that's released into the atmosphere is very different than CO2 because it turns over more quickly. So as soon as we substantially cut emissions, the atmospheric concentrations will start to drop. And that's not true for carbon dioxide. It would take centuries to see the concentrations drop without other approaches. So we need to cut emissions, sort of turn the corner on reducing concentrations in the atmosphere, and on top of that, use methane oxidation and methane removal to help us kind of speed the pathway down to pre-industrial levels, which were well below. We're 2.5 times higher today than we were a century or two ago. So the methane cycle has been far more perturbed by human activity than the carbon dioxide cycle has.
As we finish up here, Rob, what else are you working on these days?
Well, I work a lot, and my group works a lot on methane mitigation. We're working on home appliances right now, trying to understand emissions from stoves, gas stoves and furnaces, water heaters, and co-emitted pollutants from some of those sources. So what are we releasing into our homes along with natural gas when we use it to cook? Things like NOx and carbon monoxide and even benzene. But I work with satellite companies and groups interested in detecting large sources of methane from the sky. And I think that's a really exciting area. There are new satellites being launched that will allow us to find the biggest sources of methane anywhere in the world, not just in Canada and the U.S., but in Russia and Azerbaijan and Nigeria and harder to reach places. So I'm really active in that space. And then finally, I still care a lot about natural ecosystems. We do a lot of work in forests and grasslands, trying to understand how systems will change with climate change and what droughts and heat waves mean for forests, and how we can sustain our forests longer, how we can even store additional carbon in forests around the world and by restoring forests in different places. So I care a lot about the natural world, too. It's not just industry and technological solutions that excite me.
From Stanford University, we've been speaking with Professor Rob Jackson. Rob, thank you so much for sharing your valuable time with us.
Thank you, Alex, for your interest.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.